Have you ever faced issues in life that you thought were going to be just impossible to overcome? Amen, right? I'll never forget when our boys, as they growing up, as we're getting closer and closer to them entering into college, all of a sudden I'm like, how in the world are we going to pay for college? That is mission impossible. I'm looking at my bank account. I'm thinking, there is no way we are going to somehow survive. And worse than that, I have to get a kid through college and then get him through graduate school while the other one is then also in school. I'm thinking this is mission impossible. I remember vividly when my kids were born, and every single one of them, when they were born, I thought, will I ever get another good night's sleep ever in my entire life? Will things ever be normal again? And it sure seemed like, nope, mission impossible. Maybe you had a bad breakup. And maybe you say to yourself, I don't know if I will ever feel loved again. And you think it's just all mission impossible. Today we're hitting the story, the feeding of the 5,000. The hard part about this story is that I'm guessing most of you know it. Now, if you do not know this story, congratulations. You are going to be able to enter into this story without any preconceived notions, baggage, or lessons, and you'll be able to feel what the disciples are feeling and understand some of their panic as they encounter Mission Impossible. For those of you that do know the story, like myself, I'm going to be praying that God does what he does with me all the time, which is open up something new for you that is powerful and amazing. I got some new insight into this story that I'd never had before. And so I pray that as you do this, step back and say, what would it have been like, not knowing the outcome, what would you do in a situation like this? All right, Mark chapter 6, verse 30. Now, we just had John the Baptist beheaded. That was a great Palm Sunday sermon. It was very uplifting. It was very joyful. But one thing that we need to highlight is that John the Baptist was Jesus' cousin. And probably more than that, obviously he was also the forerunner to the Messiah. There seemed to have been this friendship that's there. So we've got to start off right from the beginning that as this event is about to take place, right when it happens, he gets the news. We find it out from another story, but I want you to feel what Jesus felt and also what the disciples are feeling. It has just been reported John the Baptist is dead. Worse than that, John the Baptist has been beheaded by a horrible, nasty dictator, and his crazy wife and overly sexualized daughter. So as the disciples, they're returning from this incredible mission trip where they went out, and Jesus had said, I'm going to give you authority over evil spirits. You're going to heal. You're going to cast out demons. And you're going to rely on the generosity of others. And so they've come back. They're filled with joy. And then they get the news. So right now, I would say that emotions are all over the place. Now add to it, there is a lot of people. Mark 6, starting verse 30. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. They're excited. Jesus, we cast out demons. Jesus, we healed people. Jesus is excited. Hey, Jesus, your cousin is dead, and they're after you now. Oh, this is great. But while that is going on, then because so many people were coming and going that they didn't even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. I think one of the sins that we have inside the church that pastors get involved in, but also key lay leaders, is the sin of busyness. The idea that I have to always be doing something. Do you ever feel that pressure? Maybe you don't. I do all the time. You know, if I sit in my office and pray, I feel guilty. Because, I mean, really, shouldn't I be like doing something? Shouldn't I be like reading something, maybe calling someone on the phone, maybe checking out a commentary, and I feel super guilty that I'm sitting there praying? Or after Easter, right? I love the pictures where it says Jesus is alive and then the pastor is dead, you know, and we're both in the same poses. I'm laying on the couch like this, right? But Jesus is alive. I felt after Easter like I needed just a small, tiny break. Like that was a lot of work. And I was super happy that we did such great things, but I was tired. Is it okay for me to take a rest? I mean, this is one of those very significant things. It made it into the top 10. The top 10 commandments, one of them is make sure you're taking rest. Now, those of you that are young, you probably don't like that. You don't feel that that's a good use of your time. Jesus knows this. The disciples just got back off a huge high. They've been working like crazy. Now they're surrounded by a ton of other people. And Jesus says, I think we should get away and take some rest. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. So they get in the boat and they're rowing that boat ashore. And based on the geography, we believe that they have actually gone 5 miles away. They're trying to escape the crowd, but many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. Can you imagine? Yeah, you think the paparazzi are bad now? Imagine back then. These people are watching Jesus go out to shore, and they're out on the boat, and they're continuing to follow, and they're looking at where the boat's headed, and they're like, I think he's headed over that way. Okay, Joe, you run in. You're going to go to that town. Okay, Frank, you're headed to that town. Go tell them, grab as many as you can. We gotta be there when Jesus lands. Jesus is amazing. Jesus is wonderful. He's going to do some incredible things. So all of these people are running all over the place. They get there ahead of them. Verse 34, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. All right, quick note about how many people? 5,000 men. I was waiting for someone to say 5,000. I was saying, well, you're kind of close. Yes, 5,000 men are there, not the women, not the children, so we could be 10,000, 15,000 people. This is a lot of people. Yeah, okay, we have a little bit fewer than 5,000 people sitting here in the church. So just imagine this mass of people have gathered, and Jesus looks on them, and this is where Mark starts doing something which I had never seen before until I studied it this time around. I think he's going to start pulling stuff from Psalm 23. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. And you're going to find there's a couple of things that happen, and you're like, oh, Mark is dropping some clues that help us to understand what's going on. He lands, he sees the masses, and his heart just breaks because they are sheep without a shepherd. I've lost my mic. You can still hear me, but it's gone on. It's not coming through on, there's the technical difficulties. Thank you, Joshua. Is it not coming through with in the back? Is that what happened? Well, I know you can hear me, but, you know, don't you want my golden voice to go out to everyone else? Are you getting texts from Heather?
No.
There we go. Okay. All right. Okay, there we go. There we go. Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good. I love it. So Jesus is having compassion on them like sheep without a shepherd. This is very helpful for you and I because I know for all of us, we really want to feel that our lives are put together. But let's face it, how many times do you feel a little bit lost in life? Do you ever feel like I'm just living and existing, but I don't know what I'm actually doing? I'm sucking oxygen and I'm taking up space, but I don't know if I have a purpose. I really want to do something, but I need someone to come along and tell me what to do. And then we turn to God, and sometimes we feel like we are scattered. And sometimes we feel really guilty. At that moment, I can guarantee you, Jesus does not look at you and say, why don't you have your life together? You should have it together by now. especially for those of you that are older. You might be like, yeah, I should have really gotten my life together by now, but I don't. I feel lost. I feel confused. When we go to him and we say this is where we're at, you know what he does? He looks on us with compassion. And he says, I'm here for you, and I want to be your shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. I'm going to be guided, Lord, by you. And even though I'm sure at this point Jesus is exhausted, the disciples are exhausted, he starts teaching them. Now, I love what it says there. So he began teaching them many things. That's kind of a bad translation. It actually is supposed to be, he started teaching them for a long time. So my biblical precedent for long sermons is straight from Jesus. So if you hate my long sermons, then you hate Jesus, and I worry for your salvation. Whoa, that just escalated quickly. I am just kidding, people. Partially. Okay, verse 35. By this time, it was late in the day. So his disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place, and it's very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. Some people think that what the disciples are doing at this point is something very generous. I just personally don't believe it based on what I know about the disciples. They are not usually the generous kind. I also love it when they come and tell Jesus various obvious things. Hey, Jesus, this is a remote place. Jesus is like, yeah, you think? I kind of built it. Like, I designed this whole thing called world. And Jesus, I don't know if you're aware, but everyone's getting hungry. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I know, I tease our prayer life a lot. I mean, do you ever feel like you're telling God the most obvious things? I hate it when I do it. Dear Lord, please be with us. Amen. And God's like, well, I guess I can't leave you now. You asked, so okay, sure. Dear Lord, please be with so-and-so. They just lost their loved one. Well, thank you for the heads up. I was unaware that someone had actually passed away. So I'm thankful that Jesus's response isn't, yeah, you think. Instead, Jesus has other things that he's worried about. The disciples, I think, are hungry, tired, and they had originally wanted to get away with Jesus so that they could get some rest. And so it's now getting later. It's time to send the people away. Send them into the villages so that they could buy themselves something to eat. And Jesus, in good Jesus fashion, answered, you give them something to eat. Now, if the disciples had anything to eat, what would have already happened to the food? They would have already ate it, right? They're not like, you know, like, you give them something to eat. Oh, I didn't realize I had a taco in my, you know what, that's really a good idea. No, if they had food ahead of time, they'd be like, oh, yes, well, hold on a second, guys, I'm going to go help this group over here, and then you'd be like stuffing your face and eating stuff, and they're going to be starving, but at least I'm going to have something to eat. So you give them something to eat is a challenge. It's a stretching of the faith, and again, we cannot say to ourselves we would do any better. Because we wouldn't. We get into these situations, these mission impossibles, and the first thing we usually do is we evaluate our situation, and then we evaluate our resources. If our resources cannot match up to the situation we are facing, we immediately go into despair. If the situation you are encountering is that someone is leaving you and it really, really hurts you, and you look at your own mental and physical capabilities and you go, I don't have the ability to not be without this person, you are going to immediately despair because I don't have the resources to cope with this. If you ended up looking at your college or your kids' college or your grandkids' college and you say, I look at the cost there and I look at my resources, there is no way this is going to happen. And you've heard me say it a million times also with the launching of Searchlight back in 2001. I will never forget the time I went to the offering box and there was $34 in the offering. And we had a $5,000 rental payment that we needed to make. Plus, I hadn't got a paycheck in a while. No one in the church had gotten a paycheck. And I'm looking at all this. I'm like, there is no way this thing is ever going to work, because I looked at my resources and the situation before me and I immediately despaired and said, I can't do it. So when God asks you to do something and you are worried about it, maybe what he is trying to do is have you get your eyes off of your resources and onto him. Now, please know this. Your resources are absolutely crucial. If you know the story, we're about to find some food. And we're going to gather those resources, but could God have fed the masses without the food that was found? Is that possible? Yeah, like, see, that's why I think I'd be a better Messiah, because if I were Jesus, right at that, I know everyone's ducking, like there's going to be lightning bolts coming down, right? You know what I would have done with this? Like imagine that you are all just hungry and starving to death. You know what I'd do? Fill your stomach. Could Jesus have filled their stomachs instantaneously? Yeah. With some good stuff. Sean, what would you need? Man, that sounds so good. Barbecue tacos. Woo! Man. Jesus did not need the disciples. But he wanted the disciples. That's the same with us. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Marcel. Yeah. Right. They just did all these wonderful, incredible miracles, and then, right. And that's us, yeah. We have a miracle happen in our life, and we're like, oh my goodness, that was amazing. God just did incredible things. And then all of a sudden, you don't have enough money to pay the electric bill, and you start to despair and go, well, that's it. I'm done. I'm over. And God's like, "What? No, I'm in the business of miracles. I do miracles all the time." And that's the thing. We look at it because we're not looking at it from God's point of view. We're looking at it from our limited capacity and our limited resources. And that's what the disciples, they went out and did. And remember, when they sent them out, did Jesus send them out with resources? No, he said, when you go out, you're not even going to take an extra cloak. You're going to take no money. You're going to take no food. And you're going to go and you're going to rely and trust that I'm going to provide all these things for you. So yeah, they just get back. They're casting out demons. And Jesus says, you give them something to eat. And you and I would have done the exact same thing. And we would have started to despair. They said to him, that would take 8 months of a man's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? Now, 8 months wages, how people calculate these things out. All I just say is, like, what would it cost for me to take 5,000 people out to Lucille's barbecue time, right? Yeah, Lucille's barbecue. Wow, that's a little pricey. Marie Callender's. Let's go a little bit cheaper. Even then, just went there and it was expensive too. Let's say it was 20 bucks. I don't. Did the disciples get tipped? I don't know. 20 bucks, 5,000 people. Sorry, 5,000 men, and then women and children. And we know the women don't eat that much. Like, oh, I'm so full. Thank you. No, we know you're hungry too. 10,000 people, 20 bucks. How much is that? That's you're like, we came to church to learn about Jesus, not do math, right? Yeah. This is a lot of money. So they start to despair. Now, the other interesting thing, Marcella, is has there ever been another miracle where someone fed a lot of people with very little stuff? It's actually interesting. The story has actually already taken place. If you write it in your thing, 2 Kings chapter 4. Now, if you want to flip there, you can, but I'm going to just read it for you because I just think it's very fascinating. 2 Kings chapter 4, and I'm going to be starting verse 42. And this is what it says. A man came from Baal Shalisha, bringing the man of God 20 loaves of barley bread, baked from the first ripe grain, along with some heads of new grain. So you get 20 loaves. And he says, and Elisha, the prophet, says, give it to the people to eat, Elisha said. How can I set this before 100 men? So there's 100 guys, and they're starving, and they had 20 loaves of barley bread. And they're like, this isn't going to work out. But Elisha said, give it to the people to eat, for this is what the Lord says. They will eat and have some left over. Then he set it before them, and they ate and had some left over according to the word of the Lord. So this miracle has already happened. You know what's going to get really awkward is when it happens again in another feeding miracle. At that time, there was fewer people. It wasn't 5,000. It was 4,000. But that's what we do. We look at a mission impossible. We look at 100 loaves. So 100 men, 20 loaves, not enough. Now we're staring down 5,000 hungry people with women and children. And Jesus says, what do you have? How many loaves do you have? He said, go and see. Isn't it interesting? Again, could Jesus have turned stones into bread? Yeah. He could have made it mysteriously disappear. He could have had angels descending from the heavens with double doubles for everybody. Right? He could have. But what does he choose to do? He chooses you, and he chooses me. He chooses his disciples who have faith but struggle in life just like the rest of us. So go and see what you have. When they found out, of course, does anyone remember who they found it from? A little kid, right? Yeah, he's got a SpongeBob SquarePants lunch pail, and he was there. And they're like, hey, kid, what you got? What you got in there, right? Who's the disciple that, you know, said, hey, can I have that, please? It's very awkward. But they get this guy. I don't know if maybe the kid was moved and brought forth or the disciples went and got. But I'll tell you this much. It was not that the people saw the generosity of this young kid and then they all go, oh, my gosh, I'm so moved it. Oh, my gosh, you're right. I did have a taco in here. I can't believe that. Would you like to have a bite of my taco? Oh, my gosh, I totally forgot I had this pizza. I'm so sorry. Let me share my pizza. No, they're walking around. They're asking people, what do you got? And all of them are like, I got nothing. Kid shows up, and what does he have? Five loaves and two fish. Now, I don't want to parse what the loaves. Even if these were five large loaves of bread and two massive fishes from the sea, would that still have been enough for about 15,000 people? Right. But it gets worse because it obviously wasn't five loaves, i.e. loaves. It was essentially five pieces of or biscuits or pieces of bread. It could have even been crackers. It's just, what we do know is it's a little kid's lunch. Now, I've been around little kids, and man, they eat a whole lot of food. They just consume, it seems like. So maybe they were a little bit bigger. And then the two fish, probably not, you know, no fisherman tails here. It's not this big. Five, I don't know, maybe this big? Maybe, I don't know. What is the idea? His mom, who was so wonderful, packed him a lunch, and somehow this kid ended up maybe with his mom, maybe with his dad at this location, and he's going to share his five loaves and two fish. Now, is that enough? It's never enough. I don't care what resources you have. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care how much talent you have. I don't care how much time you think you have. All of the problems you are going to face in this world, you will not have enough, ever. but God still wants to use it. God still wants to take whatever you have, combine it with Him, and it will be enough. That's when the mission impossible becomes the mission possible. We don't ever have to worry, even when we look at our resources and says, that is not enough, God says, yes, it is, because I'm with you, and that's what He's going to prove in this next section. Now, they got the 5 loaves and 2 fish. Very interesting. Jesus directed them to all have the people sit down in groups on the green grass. Why does Mark mention, like, that seems like such a dumb, like, why didn't you tell us more about the bread and the fish? Like, let's get some sizes out here. Why do you care about the color of the grass? Why does He care? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures, on green grass. I think the Mark is playing off of this, trying to help them see that, and again, and it is true, this is, God is a God of order, not chaos, right? If you've ever tried to feed a lot of people in a short amount of time, it can sometimes get really chaotic, right? That Chick-fil-A was not in charge of the drive-through lines yet. Man, they're boom, boom, boom. It's amazing. God says, you're going to sit down and you are going to rest. And there's going to come a point, you're not going to say, I am in need. I am in want. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in need. That's our prayer. That's what we believe and that's what we trust in, when Jesus is our good shepherd. And when we are faced with something that is impossible to do, when we are faced with lacking resources and a big, gigantic problem, God says, sit down. You're going to rest in the green grass, and I'll take it from here. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. I love this. So it's going to be massive groups. Even then, I don't really like being around hangry people. I've got three young men in my house, and when they get hungry, it's bad. And I know, because when I get hungry, I get bad. So they're all starving to death. Jesus, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, He gave thanks. He broke the loaves. He gave it to His disciples to set before the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. I've read a lot of commentaries on all the different stories of the feeding of the 5,000. I finally, for the very, 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 very first time, read a commentary that said this has overtones. It's a foreshadowing. It is prefiguring the Lord's Supper. And I was finally filled with joy. Jesus took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and gave it to His disciples. What does that sound like to you? I mean, it does not take a rocket scientist to say that He's foreshadowing what's taking place. Now, this is where, again, I love to laugh at the disciples, because the disciples have problems, much like us. But I'll tell you this. The disciples are about to do something that I don't think anyone here would do. I really don't. They are about to demonstrate a level of faith unseen up until this point. They went out and they cast out demons. They went out and they healed the sick. And now they are faced with something that seems rather ordinary, hungry people. And they feel despairing. They don't have the resources. God says, I'm in control. And what happens? So He divides the loaves. He says also He divided the 2 fish among them all. Among who all? Among the disciples. So you're going to get, so Bob, I'm going to give you 5/12 of a piece of bread and 1/6 of a fish. Right? No, 1/12. Wait. Math, it's not good. And Sydney, I'm going to give you the same thing now. Just imagine, everyone look down at your little plate, and you've got 5/12 of a piece of bread. Yeah, it is 5/12. I was right. 5/12 of a piece of bread and 1/6 of a fish. How much is on your plate? You got nothing. And what does Jesus say? Okay, go and Go to that first group over there. You want me to go where? Yeah, that group over there, you're gonna give them food. Who here would have done it? I'm not going to lie. I don't know if I would have. I would have sat there frozen in fear going, this is not enough. It's not going to work. Now, I am presupposing something, and I think I have pretty good reason to believe this because of the way it's always done throughout Scripture, and that is I don't believe the multiplication of the loaves and the fishes happened on the disciples' plate. Now, I can't prove that, but that does seem to be how God works. God often says, you don't have the resources, but I do. I want to use your resources, but I need you to take what you have, offer it up, and then trust that I am going to be there with you. Trust that you will now have enough. And if we do not take the resources that we have, that we are entrusting to God, and we do not go out and use them, will God then multiply the gift? I don't think so. He typically doesn't work that way. Now, again, I never want to put God in a box because then he breaks through it and does whatever he wants. But when I see, again, to me, the best example is the crossing of the Jordan River, right? They're getting ready to cross Jordan River, and they've got the Ark of the Covenant, and they're carrying the Ark of the Covenant. How heavy is the Ark of the Covenant? It's pretty heavy. I mean, I've watched Indiana Jones, and it looks like that's pretty solid. So excited for the next one. Indiana Jones rocks, right? And God says, you're going to cross the Jordan River in flood stage, and you're going to walk through it on dry land, and this is how it's going to work. Go and put your foot into the river, and then I'll stop the water. Now, what would you have wanted? First of all, if I were in front, I would immediately look at Mike Deck and say, Mike, I was carrying the front last week. I think it's your turn up front now. Get up here. Yeah. We're switching spots, right? And then you're like, you're standing there and you're watching this river go and you're like, this doesn't make any sense. If I put my foot in, I'm going to die, right? It's just in flood stage. You're going to put it in and you're going to, right? And then you've got the Ark of the Covenant, which is not very buoyant, right? You're not going to be able to hang on to that to float you anywhere. It's going to crush you into the bottom of the thing. And when does God stop the water? When they put their foot in the water. We often want God to do the miracle before we exercise the faith. Now, can God do that? Sure. He can do anything he wants. But what does God want most importantly for you and for me? He wants our faith to grow. He wants us to trust in him. He wants us to rely on him. And so if we're faced with the mission impossible and we don't have the resources and we're really worried, sometimes we have to take that step of faith. I'm really glad that there's a bunch of students here that are getting ready to go on to ATW. For those of you who don't know ATW, that's around the world. That was the thing that Jacob did a couple of years ago. That was the group that brought COVID from overseas and brought it to America. And we were in LAX. There's a lot of people coughing. We hadn't even heard of COVID yet, right? And we got a bunch of students that are going to go on ATW. Are you guys scared at all? David, are you scared? You're just going to take whatever God gives you and look at it and go, okay, let's go. We're not perfect. Yes, yeah, we got to be a little bit humble about it, right? Yeah. Abby, how are you feeling? Yeah. How are you guys paying for it? Because that was the same thing with Jacob. Like, I'm going to go at ATW. I'm like, that's great. Like, oh, it's just another semester of college. I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. No, there's an extra $10,000 price tag added on top of $10,000. Abby, do you have $10,000? But wait, you're still going, though, aren't you? The Lord will provide. The Lord will provide. He will take whatever you have, your meager resources, and he will take whatever's happening in your life and he will somehow make things happen. We should never fear the future with God on our side, ever. It might look bad. I do the same thing right before every presidential election. I'm pretty certain that the whole world is going to collapse on itself, right? Because people are going crazy. And then I remember something. God was on the throne before, and he'll be on the throne afterwards. And my fear is unfounded because of who God is. If you are facing something in life, and maybe it's a breakup, or maybe you just got laid off from your job, or maybe you're faced with a $10,000 ATW bill, don't sit around and say, okay, God, provide, because what is he going to say? Well, what do you have? What are you bringing to this? And watch what happens. So what do the disciples do? They grab the plate, and they do something miraculous. They actually go and distribute the food. Would you have distributed the food? I don't know if I would have. There's a group of hungry people. I've got 5/12 of a piece of bread and 1/6 of a fish. I'm not too sure I would like God to please multiply this there, but I don't think he does. Instead, he waits for me to put my foot in the river. He waits until the disciples come over to the first group. Hi, how are you? Yeah? Name's Thomas. Doubt this will work. That's okay. No? I've used the doubting Thomas story way too much. Yeah. Bartholomew. Okay. Here we go. Are you hungry, ma'am? Would you like some bread? And you're looking at the thing like, that's like an appetizer, man. Like, I don't know if you're going to. And somehow, when it's distributed, and I wish I knew the mechanics. Man, so there's green grass, but how did the stuff multiply? Because I think at that point it started going crazy, because if you have ever been on a mission for God, if you have ever followed him, trusting that he's going to provide stuff, all of a sudden things get really fun. All of a sudden, what do you think the disciples are doing? You know what I'd be doing? I'd be like throwing the bread. I'd be like, you, back there. Yes, here you go. Yeah, and I'd be distributing as fast as I could humanly possibly. Now again, question, how tired are the disciples? They're exhausted. How tired is Jesus? Exhausted. This is one of the reasons why we often aren't generous with what we have, trusting in God, is because we're too tired. And we're also worried that there's not going to be enough left. Well, let's see what happens. This is interesting. So, they all, verse 42, they all ate and were satisfied. Now, I am curious if, oh, is that your car, Michael? We'll be praying for you. Dear Lord, turn off his alarm right now. See, I don't have enough faith. I actually wrote this in my thing because, out of curiosity, who here would like to have a fish bread lunch today? Is anyone going to do a fish bread lunch? It's a filet fish sandwich? Yeah, lox and bagels. Yes, that's it. Yeah, but they didn't have cream cheese. So, like, lox and bagels without the cream cheese? I'm a little. Now, these people, what did they need? They needed something, anything. They were desperate. And it doesn't say that anyone complained, and I think we've also got to be careful that we don't end up in the complaining crowd. Well, I didn't want this. Well, you know what? Sometimes God gives you exactly what you need, but it is not coming how you thought it was going to come. That's how the early people missed Jesus in the first place. They had the idea of who this Messiah is going to be. And when he showed up, they said, that's not who we want. We want a conquering king. We want a hero that's going to throw off the Romans. We want someone who's going to stand up and be victorious and show everyone who's boss. And along comes Jesus, and he says, I'm going to die for you. And they're like, that's not what I want. Well, but that is exactly what you need at this point. And they all ate and were satisfied. So this is not, again, people aren't sharing food. 5,000 men, 10,000, maybe 15,000 in total. They all ate and were satisfied. Probably a better translation would be satiated. They were full. They were done. And then comes the big thing. Were the disciples eating along the way? I mean, I would have taken a couple of snacks every now and then to satisfy my hunger, but we seem to find out that that wasn't the case. They are simply just serving. They are just simply giving. And there are some times when we face things in life and we go, I don't know how much I have left to give. And again, if you get to a point where I'm struggling to give, are you giving solely out of your own resources? If you are contemplating getting a divorce, and you say, I just don't have anything left in me to give to this relationship, I always come back and say, are you giving out of your own resources, or are you giving out of God's resources? Have you given up on your teenage child because they are just give out of control? And you say, I have tried everything, and I give, and I give, and I give. And then I have to ask, are you giving out of your own with the circumstances, or are you giving out of God's? Are you faced with the circumstance that looks impossible, but it's well, patient, but also making sure that you still do it. It's that incredible time, and again, I've experienced it so many times in my life. I think I experience every Christmas, every Easter, that we give and we give and we give and we give. And I have to trust that, is God going to give back to me? And the answer is yes, he will. Because Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, I get what you're saying. That they're not patient in their service. They want instantaneous gratification. They want to be able to say, they want to hear Jesus' words, well done, good and faithful servant, before they've even had a chance to go out and serve. And let me tell you, that's challenging. For youth to go around the world, you're going to be stretched literally to your limits. You are not going to understand it. For those of you that end up getting married, you are going to be stretched to your limits, right? All married people, is that going to happen to them? Yeah, all the married people are like, don't raise your hand too quickly, guys. No, my wife's wonderful and loving and great, and I love it. Are kids wonderful and amazing all the time? No, they're crazy. Why do we keep doing this to ourselves? If you're faced with that impossible thing, don't worry, God will always provide for you. Because what does it say? Verse 43, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. And of course, you don't need a theological degree. Why 12? 12 disciples. Even Judas? That's interesting. And then Mark ends it. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. I don't know what you're faced with in life. I don't care if you've had miracles happen in your life and you are feeling guilty because you're being faced with something you don't know what to do. I don't know if you are just completely exhausted from living life and you're thinking to yourself, I just don't even know if I can go on. I just don't know if I have anything left to give. Let's take our eyes off of our circumstances. We're going to take a look at our measly, pathetic resources. And we're going to offer them to God. You know what he's going to do with that? He's going to give thanks to God, and miracles are going to happen. As Abby said, before we sang the song, God is still in the business of rolling stones away. And maybe you need that today. Will you pray? Lord, we are often faced with just incredible circumstances that make no sense, incredible things that are so hard to deal with, and we're worried because we don't have enough. Lord, I'm tired. Easter was great. But it seems sometimes that I don't have much to give. And then you just say, you just give, I'll provide for you. And I thank you that every single time I felt like there was nothing left, you came along with your presence and spirit, and you would give me a joy that I would that was unlike any other. And Lord, so many times we get so focused on our own problems that we miss the starving people that are out there that are in need of your love and grace. And we get so focused on ourselves and we keep saying, well, what about us? What about us? What about us? And the commercials keep coming. And it just, Lord, I know that you're saddened by that, because one of the greatest ways that I know I get joy is when I serve someone else. And sometimes I do it and I get selfish and I think, but what about me? And then you come along with a beautiful basket of food. And Lord, I sometimes gripe and complain that it's not chicken wings. It's instead exactly what I needed. And thank you that you provide that. Lord, we offer to you right now our meager resources, what we have. We're excited to see what you will do that, because you're still in the business of miracles today. Thank you for the missions that are impossible in front of us, and may we lean into you for everything else. Amen.